The Healer, The Healing Work of Mary Baker Eddy, compiled and arranged by David Keeston. Part 4. And they were healed, every one. Acts. Enlightenment and Progress, 1866 to 1891. Number 35A. In mid-1866, Mary Patterson's unfaithful husband eloped with one of his dental patients. The woman's husband chased them and brought his wife home to lock her in a room, feeding her only bread and water. She, of course, feared for her life, and with the help of their servants, escaped, coming to Mrs. Patterson's house, her paramour's wife. Mrs. Patterson, Eddie, asked the woman, "For what have you come to me? You who have robbed me of my good husband and desolated my happy home. You who have disgraced yourself and your family." She replied, "I came because of what your husband has told me of you. I knew you must be a good woman, and I felt you would help me." After explaining her circumstance at home and that she thought her husband was going to kill her, she pleaded with Mrs. Patterson to entreat her husband to forgive her indiscretions with Mary's husband. Mary did in fact meet with the man, who asked of her if she could forgive her own husband as well as his wife. Mrs. Eddy's reply was, "I forgive them both, and I ask you to forgive them." Then he left me, and my heart went with him. I do not know but that I went to God in prayer for that husband and his home. Some time after, I heard that his wife was at the table, for the cruelly wronged husband had forgiven her, and their home again a happy one. From John. And the scribes and Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they say unto him, "Master, this woman was taken in adultery, in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned. But what sayest thou?" This they said, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down, and with his finger wrote on the ground, as though he heard them not. So when they continued asking him, he lifted up himself, and said unto them, "He that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her." And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. And they which heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning at the eldest, even unto the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus had lifted up himself and saw none but the woman, he said unto her, "Woman, where are those thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee?" She said, "No man, Lord." And Jesus said unto her, "Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more." Number 36. Dorr Phillips, son of Thomas and Hannah Phillips, healing, was the first through Mrs. Patterson's demonstration of mind science. The lad had a bone felon on the end of one of his fingers that kept him awake at night and away from school during the day. Mrs. Patterson had not been to the Phillips house for several days, And when she did so and found the boy in agony, walking the floor, she gently and sympathetically questioned him, "Dor, will you let me heal that felon?" "Yes, indeed, Mrs. Patterson, if you can do it," replied the lad. "Will you promise not to do anything for it, or let anyone else, if I undertake to cure it?" "Yes, I promise, and I will keep my word," said Dor. He had heard his father and their friend discuss divine healing many times, and had a boy's healthy curiosity to see what would happen if all this talk was actually tried on a wicked, tormenting, festering felon that was making him fairly roar with rage 1 minute and cry like a girl the next. That night, the boy stopped at his sister Susie's house. "How is your finger?" she asked solicitously. "Nothing the matter with my finger. It hasn't hurt all day. Mrs. Patterson is treating it." "What is she doing to it? Let me look at it." "No, you'll spoil the cure." "I promised not to look at it or think about it, nor let anyone else touch it or talk about it. And I won't." The brother and sister looked at each other with half smiles. They were struggling with skepticism. "Honest, Dor, doesn't it hurt?" "No." "Tell me what she did." "I don't know what she did. Don't know anything about this business, but I'm going to play fair and keep my word." The boy actually forgot the felon, and when his attention was called to the finger, it was found to be well. This strange result made an impression on the family. No one quite knew what to say, and they were scarcely ready to accept the healing of a sore finger as a miracle. "But it is not a miracle," said Mary Patterson. "Nor would it be if it had been a broken wrist or a withered arm. It is natural, divinely natural. All life, rightly understood, is so." Number 37. Mother told me how she happened to have that little baby in her arms. She went into a photographer's studio to ask about the price of photographs. And when she entered his reception room, she found a lady there holding a baby which she was trying to pacify. The child was screaming, which made it impossible for him to be photographed. An hour later, noticed that every little while, the baby looked at her and then screamed again. So she said to his mother, "Won't you let me hold your baby for a little while? Perhaps I can quiet him." And the baby put his arms up to meet hers. As soon as she took him, he put his thumb in his mouth, as you will see, and there is a picture of contentment. Then the photographer, unknown to Mrs. Eddy, took a photograph of her and the child, and afterwards sent her a copy, asking her to accept it, and said that it was such a beautiful picture, he could not help taking it. Mrs. Eddy's natural mother love was always perceived by the little children. From Mark. "Suffer the little children to come unto me, and forbid them not, for of such is the kingdom of God." Number 38. One summer day in 1866, Mrs. Patterson was on the beach in Lynn when she saw a sad sight that needed healing. Mrs. James Norton of Lynn had taken her 7-year-old son, George, to Lynn Beach and left him there while she hitched the horse and went for water. The child had club feet and had never walked. When the mother returned, she was stunned to see her boy walking hand in hand with a strange woman. Mrs. Norton and the stranger, Mrs. Patterson, looked into each other's eyes, then both wept and joined in thanks to God. The child was completely and permanently healed and lived a happy, useful life. See also the account by Clifford Smith in Christian Science, Its Legal Status, page 83. In a similar healing to that of Dorr Phillips cited previously, Mrs. Eddy had this to say about James Wheeler's finger. The day that his physician, an M.D., had proposed to amputate his finger, I asked to be allowed to treat him. My request was granted. With one mental treatment, the finger was healed. Later, she mentioned some of the details of this healing to one of her secretaries, Irving C. Tomlinson. Mr. Wheeler was antagonistic to science, but his wife was friendly. His wife had already told me of his agony and had asked me to help him. He had his hat on, waiting to take the carriage to visit the surgeon. I said to him, "Will you allow me to stand here a few minutes before you go?" He replied, "If you will be quick, I will." I stood in thought for perhaps 5 minutes when he said, "There is not a bit of pain or soreness in my finger." In a half hour, after rubbing his finger and saying, "It doesn't hurt a particle," he went out, got in his carriage, and went about his business, never feeling any inconvenience from the finger thereafter. Number 39. Most of Mrs. Eddy's practice for particular persons occurred during the 20 years 1867 to 1886 that followed her discovery of Christian Science. She never made practice for particular persons her chief occupation. Always, she devoted her thought chiefly to her own obligations as discoverer, founder, and leader. From 1883, she gave notice in the Christian Science Journal that she would not take patients. Yet, she was the instrument for many healings after that. In the historical files of the Mother Church, there is a letter to Mrs. Eddy dated December 9, 1904, from a lady who described herself as one of the lepers who has come at last to give thanks for his healing. Presumably, she alluded to the 10 lepers whom the Master healed, as related in Luke 17, verses 11 to 19, of whom one returned to give thanks. She continued, "You healed me many years ago of a loathsome disease with just a word. The trouble has never returned. Words fail to express my gratitude for that healing." She also enclosed a check, which Mrs. Eddy returned with an appreciative letter. Number 40. At the Oliver home lived a rich young man from Boston who had come to Lynn to learn the shoe business. He was intense and active, eager to show his father his business sagacity. but severe application to business and excitement over his new responsibilities threw him into a fever. He was brought home from the factory and put to bed, where he promptly lapsed into delirium. The Olivers saw that he was very ill and sent for his parents. Before they arrived, Mrs. Patterson came to the house and found Susan Oliver in distress over the serious situation. "If he should die before they come, what would I do?" she asked excitedly. "Perhaps I should call our physician. But they might not like it. He is their only child. Think of his prospects, his father's fortune, and for him to be stricken in this way." "He is not going to die, Susie," said Mary Baker. "Let me go in and see him." "You may go in if you think it best, but he won't recognize you," said Mrs. Oliver. Mary Baker went into the sick chamber and sat down at the side of the bed. The young man was tossing from side to side, throwing his arms about wildly and moaning. She took his hand, held it firmly, and spoke clearly to him, calling him by a familiar name. "Bobby," she said, "look at me. You know me, don't you?" The young man ceased his monotonous moaning, his tossing on the pillows, and his spasmodic fits. He lay quiet and gazed steadfastly at the newcomer. "Of course you know me, Bobby," she persisted gently. "Tell me my name." "Why, yes," he said with perfect sanity, "it's Mrs. Patterson." "In a few minutes," he said, "I believe I will go to sleep." He did go to sleep and waked rational and did not again have delirium. Number 41. Several instances of Mrs. Eddy's healing ability appeared in many editions of her book, Science and Health. I take pleasure in giving to the public one instance out of the many of Mrs. Glover Eddy's skill in metaphysical healing. At the birth of my youngest child, now 8 years old, I thought my approaching confinement would be premature by several weeks, and sent her a message to that effect. Without seeing me, she returned answer that the proper time had come, and that she would be with me immediately. Just imagine, she knew when the baby was to be born before the mother knew. Slight labor pains had commenced before she arrived. She stopped them at once and requested me to call an accoucheur, but to keep him below stairs until after the birth. When the doctor arrived, and while he remained in a lower room, Mrs. Eddy came to my bedside. I asked her how I should lie. She answered, "It makes no difference how you lie," and added, "Now let the child be born." Immediately the birth took place, and without a pain. The doctor was then called into the room to receive the child, and he saw that I had no pain whatever. My sister, Dorcas B. Rawson of Lynn, was present when my babe was born, and will testify to the facts as I have stated them. I confess my own astonishment. I did not expect so much, even from Mrs. Eddy, especially as I had suffered before very severely in childbirth. The physician covered me with extra bedclothes, charged me to be very careful about taking cold and to keep quiet and then went away. I think he was alarmed at my having no labor pains. But before he went out, I had an ague coming on. When the door closed behind him, Mrs. Eddy threw off the extra coverings and said, "It is nothing but the fear produced by the doctor that causes these chills." They left me at once. She told me to sit up when I chose and to eat whatever I wanted. My babe was born about 2 o'clock in the morning, and on the following evening I sat up several hours. I ate whatever the family did. I had a boiled dinner of meat and vegetables the second day. I made no difference in my diet except to drink gruel between meals, and never experienced the least inconvenience from this course. I dressed myself the second day, and the third day felt unwilling to lie down. In 1 week, I was about the house and was well, running up and down stairs and attending to domestic duties. For several years, I had been troubled with prolapsus uteri, which disappeared entirely after Mrs. Eddy's wonderful demonstration of Christian Science at the birth of my babe. Lynn, Massachusetts, 1874, Miranda R. Rice. Number 42. Mrs. Patterson's first student was Hiram Crafts, a shoemaker in the town of Lynn. While Mrs. Patterson was staying with the Crafts in nearby Stoughton, Massachusetts, she agreed to teach him her system of mental healing in exchange for room and board. During her stay with the Crafts, she met the Wentworths, and on one of their visits they brought their daughter, Celia. Celia had been suffering from consumption, and Mrs. Patterson's tender ministrations healed the girl, creating quite an impression on the mother. Number 43. In retrospection and introspection, Mrs. Eddy recalls yet another healing she performed when she was asked to speak at the Lyceum Club at Westerly, Rhode Island. On my arrival, my hostess told me that her next-door neighbor was dying. I asked permission to see her. It was granted, and with my hostess I went to the invalid's house. The physicians had given up the case and retired. I had stood by her side about 15 minutes when the sick woman rose from her bed, dressed herself, and was well. Afterwards, they showed me the clothes already prepared for her burial and told me that her physicians had said the diseased condition was caused by an injury received from a surgical operation at the birth of her last babe, and that it was impossible for her to be delivered of another child. It is sufficient to add, her babe was safely born and weighed 12 pounds. The mother afterwards wrote to me, "I never before suffered so little in childbirth." This scientific demonstration so stirred the doctors and clergy that they had my notices for a second lecture pulled down and refused me a hearing in their halls and churches. This circumstance is cited simply to show the opposition which Christian Science encountered a quarter century ago, as contrasted with its present welcome into the sick room. Many were the desperate cases I instantly healed, without money and without price, and in most instances without even an acknowledgement of the benefit. Number 44. Mrs. Eddy's healing of a woman of dumbness in Lynn about the year 1867 was related to me many years later by her son. She had been treated by many physicians without relief. When a friend proposed that she see Mrs. Eddy, people seldom turned to Christian Science in those days until all other hope was exhausted, for Mrs. Eddy was considered a strange woman. So desperate was his mother's condition, however, that she asked for treatment from one of Mrs. Eddy's students. The student found difficulty in handling the case. Each day when the woman, who was then a girl, returned from a visit to the practitioner, the first words of her mother were, "Fanny, can you speak?" Fanny would sadly shake her head in the negative. At last, it was decided to call on Mrs. Eddy for help. On the day of her return from her visit to Mrs. Eddy, the daughter was again greeted with the old question, "Fanny, can you speak?" Instantly, the answer came back, "Yes, I can." And she continued, "When Mrs. Eddy saw after my treatment that I still could not speak, she suddenly said with authority, 'In the name of God, speak.' Instantly I spoke my first word, saying, 'Oh.' After that experience, the patient found herself fully healed." Number 45. The religious thought of the day was filled with such resistance to her healing works that she was maligned, burned in effigy, and attempts at incarceration were made. Claims of witchcraft, or that her works by her faith were of the devil, were not infrequent from the clergy of the day. At one time, it is reported that when she was visiting Worcester, Massachusetts, the superintendent of a mental institution called on Mrs. Eddy with the intent of locking her up for her radical statements and stand for what Jesus taught and practiced. However, once he met Mrs. Eddy and talked with her, he was apologetic, saying that he had learned a lot that would assist him in the treatment of his patients. From Matthew. When the Pharisees heard it, they said, "This fellow doth not cast out devils, but by Beelzebub, the prince of the devils." And Jesus knew their thoughts, and said unto them, "Every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and every city or house divided against itself shall not stand. And if Satan cast out Satan, he is divided against himself. How shall then his kingdom stand? And if I by Beelzebub cast out devils, by whom do your children cast them out? Therefore they shall be your judges. But if I cast out devils by the Spirit of God, then the kingdom of God is come unto you." Number 46. Just 6 or 7 months later, Mrs. Patterson was traveling to Tilton, New Hampshire, where she had been when a teen. She was visiting her brother, George Baker, and her sisters, Abigail Tilton and Martha Pillsbury. Abigail had an unreasoned hatred of Christian Science. But when all material avenues failed, she implored her sister to come and aid her daughter. George's wife related that when Mary arrived, there was a definite feeling of divine presence in the house. Within 15 minutes, Mrs. Patterson healed her niece, Ellen Pillsbury, who was critically ill with enteritis in its severest form, following typhoid fever, and who had been given up by three physicians. Previously, she had been so ill that for 2 weeks one could barely step lightly enough while in her room so as not to jar the room and cause her great pain. Ellen was soon up and walking back and forth across the room at her aunt's bidding, and even stamped her foot on the floor to show that no vestige of the previous discomfort remained. The next day, she was dressed and joined the family for dinner, and on the fourth day made a 100-mile journey in the cars. Abigail, however, was later heard to say her sister's loving ministrations were the work of the devil. Although she was the recipient of Mrs. Patterson's loving care, Ellen later turned on her, repudiating her healing and expressing an inordinate amount of hostility towards her. She was responsible for convincing her mother not to call for Mrs. Eddy, even when her mother was at death's door. Sybil Wilbur's early biography addressed this untoward opposition, comparing it to the resistance Jesus met with when in Nazareth. "Is not this the carpenter's son?" they asked. "And are not his brothers and sisters here with us?" Mrs. Eddy was touched by this reference, telling Irving Tomlinson, "Yes, it was even so."